The Department of Religious Studies at the University of Kansas is conducting a research project that seeks to preserve the history of various churches and other religious organizations in Kansas. We would like to record your memories of your experiences in religious organizations. We expect that each interview will take about 1 hour. We assure that you are not obligated to participate and may discontinue your involvement at any time. Since we are trying to create a public record of Kansas religious history, we are primarily interviewing persons who agree to let their interviews be available to the general public through a website and to be identified by name as the person who was interviewed. Should you have any questions about the project, please contact Professor Tim Miller at 785-864-7263 or tkansas@ku.edu. If you have any questions about your rights as a research participant, you may call the Human Subjects Protection Office at 785-864-7429. Or email mdenning@ku.edu.
In what churches or other religious organizations have you participated? Please provide names, locations, and dates you were active.
Southwoods Christian Church from 1997 or so through 2014. I was active in that church, led life groups and taught Sunday school and was a deacon of life group ministry, helped clean the church, helped on various fundraisers, I'm sure, throughout my time there. And then Colonial Presbyterian after that until present day. And there I've led women's life groups before and participated in women's study life groups at Colonial.
Why were people attracted to this religious body?
I believe they're attracted to Southwoods because they're just a Bible-based church that is authentic and is real with people and allows them to come as they are and grow in their relationship with God. And I believe Colonial is the same kind of church, very Bible-based, very open. I feel like Colonial, though, is more accepting of people's sins that they come with and is more authentic about that and definitely a more powerful force in the city as far as youth studies and different adult studies, too, and also helping out with ministry projects throughout the city.
What were daily experience in this religious body like?
I'd say daily experience is more your own relationship with God. It's not so much your relationship with the body. The experience of the body may have only been twice a week, three times a week, but your relationship with God's every day.
What kind of practices were involved in the group, like rituals and ceremonies?
Both churches were full immersion baptisms. Now, Southwoods did communion every week, which I enjoy. Colonial only does communion once a month. They both did praise music, and they both do a message and tithing and prayers.
How did people relate to each other? What kind of activities were found in the group?
The activities found in the group were usually service activities or maybe socials like barbecues or festivals or Easter egg hunts for kids, stuff like that. You know, walk to the manger. It's one of the big activities at Colonial each year where they do a big play and people bring forth gifts for different missions that we're sponsoring that year. Southwoods, they both do Vacation Bible School, and Vacation Bible School was a big part of Southwoods and Colonial and big outreach into communities. Stuff like that, different activities like that.
How did members of the religious group interact with other members of the general public?
I feel like some members are better outgoing than others at reaching out to others, and some are not so good about reaching out to others. But a lot of people in the religious bodies, I feel like, tried to reach out to the community and invite them in to participate in the church or to help them. One time we went door to door and did a fundraiser and one of our leadership activities where we had to collect canned goods from people, and at the same time we talked to them about our church. So that was kind of cool. Southwood, something we did.
Did food figure into your religious life? For example, did the group have potluck meals?
Yeah, both groups had potluck meals. When I think of food, though, at the church, I think of the food pantries. Both churches have food pantries that were very helpful to the community. You don't think of people in Johnson County as not having food, but there's plenty of people who need help in Johnson County with food. So those were both very active food pantry churches.
Was volunteer labor used for any part of the life of the group and maintenance of its buildings?
At Southwoods, everything was volunteer labor. That's all we had to keep the church going and take care of it. Now, at Colonial, I don't know how they clean the church there. I'm not sure if that's like Southwoods, the members do it. I've never been asked to clean, so I'm guessing they have a crew that does it. I think, though, people at the church mow it, and we have a garden at Colonial that people at the church take care of and raise food for the charities, like Salvation Army, different places in town that provide meals. They provide those vegetables for it.
What were the economic arrangements of the group? How was money raised? Who made spending decisions? And who owned the group's property?
So, Southwoods, the Evangelical Society of Kansas, put up the money, so I don't know if they owned, actually the owner of the church overall. With Colonial, it was overall definitely, he was by Presbyterian body, owned the church. And Colonial ended up taking it back, and they own it now, this local chapter of it. The arrangement economics is people have to say how much money they think they're going to give that year, and then they base the church budgets upon that tithing that everybody says they're going to give. That way they can make up their budgets and work from there. So if they don't get as much money, they don't get to do as many things.
How is the group governed? Describe the leadership, both in terms of individual leadership and committees or other structures. Were there leadership disputes? Were there any shifts or splits in the group?
Yeah, at Southwoods, that actually was probably one of the reasons I ended up leaving that church and going over to Colonial, was it had a very small leadership body, mainly run by the minister and his wife, and there were a lot of splits coming off of that because other people in the leadership body weren't always agreeing with what they wanted. And that became a problem, and people would leave the church and go to the churches. So over time, that became an issue, and they never really matured there. It took them a long time to put in elders and deacons into the church. And then they still had their way. They wanted to do things and, you know, very much failed at we did a fundraiser for to buy property, and they collected that money, and then took them at least 10 years to go buy property, and that was ridiculous. That should never happen. They're trying to buy too much property. So that really caused a lot of problems in the church among people. And then at Colonial, their leadership's more like what I grew up in, Owen Bar Church of Christ. You got a very set leadership body. You know, they rotate off on every couple years. The minister is definitely not the main decision maker, I feel like, in the body. He's just one of them. So, and there's a whole bunch more leaders over different ministries at Colonial than there are where at Southwood. So I just think it's more balanced that way. So it seems like there's not as many problems at Colonial with the leadership body.
How did your membership and participation affect your own private life outside the religious group? In other words, was your behavior affected by the group's ideals? Has been a member changed you? If you have left the group, has it had an ongoing impact on your later life?
Can I see that question? It was long.
Yeah, it's on right there. Yeah.
So I definitely think my membership helped, you know, keep my family focused on God, and, you know, my private life outside the religious group, I definitely had a stand of being a Christian and wasn't going to participate, especially when the kids were younger, and heavy drinking activities with adults and with my kids around, and that wasn't what I was going to do. And so I maintained, I think, definitely a purer lifestyle over the years than I would have without it. And my behavior was definitely affected, you know, by the group. It helped me stay accountable and helped me pursue my relationship with God more than if I wouldn't have had that body to help me to pursue. And it probably also opened me up to a lot more outreach activities. The kids and I did Freedom Fire for years. Our family did that together. We did a lot of different harvester, different events we'd go to and do over the years and help out the community. We always did the shoe boxes, Franklin Graham's shoebox outreach every Christmas. We went and provided meals to other families in our church that were sick and needing a meal. We would do that. So I feel like we grew up hosting life groups at our house. So I feel like the family had a good base of our life kind of centered around the church and the activities that were going on there.
How were new members recruited, and what was the process of joining?
Yeah, so new members were just really recruited by inviting your friends to church that, you know, didn't really have a church home, or you just talked to them about what our church did, and they wanted to come participate, they could come participate in that. But we didn't do any, like, big evangelism outreach events to bring people into the church. We just, you know, you would just word of mouth invite people, or we did that one outreach to the community as leaders where we went out and talked to people in the community, invited them to church as we collected canned goods. So, and I think they also sent mailers out to people, inviting them for Easter services and Christmas services, because those are the two biggest services people will attend that don't normally attend church.
Were there rules or agreements regarding dress or other matters of style?
No, neither church had set amounts that we had, or set lifestyle of dress we had to have at the church. I feel like they're both fairly casual churches. You can wear whatever you want. Nobody's going to say anything to you. So growing up, though, you know, going to Oakland Park Church of Christ, that was always you were expected to dress up in a dress and men in a suit. But I think those days are kind of over in America. I don't think churches like that anymore.
What were relations with the surrounding culture like?
So I think as a believer, your relationship with the surrounding culture is always tricky, because the culture definitely doesn't follow the way the church is. So I know I felt like raising kids and that was harder, and, you know, we had more boundaries for the kids, and what they weren't allowed to watch Harry Potter movies or read Harry Potter books because of the witch and warlock facets of that, and how God talks about you are not to be involved in that, and you're not supposed to go to psychics and different things like that. So over the years, those topics come up, and we have to always take a stand on our beliefs and not be part of that. So we've had those things that we have done differently as a family, and we also always, when we traveled, attended church on Sunday. Even if we were out of town, we'd try to find a church, and didn't matter what denomination, and we'd go attend and be part of their community for that day. So I think it's helped us all, though, realize there's brothers and sisters across the country that you can go relate to and enjoy on a communion, on a service on Sundays, and feel part of a community, man, or where you are, brothers and sisters in Christ. But you always need to sit in every church and listen for the truth, and we've had to do that as we sat in a Mormon church accidentally one time, and because it's called Community of Christ and didn't have anything about Mormon on the title, so we went in Branson and ended up in a Mormon church. So we were polite, but you know, it was a good learning experience for everyone that, you know, we're not hearing the truth here. They were invited for a potluck, and we stayed, and we're nice, and you know, the people were very nice there.
What kinds of relations did the group have with other local religious organizations?
They were both, all Colonial and Southwoods, a part of different bodies of believers, you know. Evangelical Society of Kansas, Southwoods belongs to, and Colonial belongs to like a Presbyterian society, but Colonial is really active in the city with helping out with other churches and help church planning and help train other churches on how they do things. And so Colonial is a huge outreach to the other community body here in Kansas City and has asked quite a bit of help from Southwoods, not so much, but Southwoods try to always, you know, reach out to like newer ministers and help them come in and get to preach there. And, you know, we'd go to Willow Creek for training. We would go up to there, to Chicago, to Willow Creek Church and get training up there. So they're both involved in Christian community around them.
What were the people like? Were there certain people that stood out to you and became important people in your life?
Definitely. Well, my pledge family already. Terry was an important person in my life. She was my pledge grandma, inducted me into the sorority when I was in college, and she's the one that invited me to Southwoods, and we started attending there. And Terry was real involved in life groups, so she invited me into her life group, Keith and I, and our family became part of that. And then Linda Irwin was the leader of life groups, and she really mentored me along and taught me a lot about life groups and leading them and helped me get involved in that. And then Mary Murray helped us a lot in children's ministry. She was over that, and we wanted to be part of that with our kids and teach them and be in their classroom, be as teachers or helpers. And Mary really helped mentor us along in that plight and helped throw us in the fire and get started. The first day we had to teach, the teacher didn't show up. We were supposed to be the helpers, so now we were the teachers. And then Mary had made some kind of play, though, that was runny as heck, and we had kids dressed up. I think it must have been some holiday. I remember a lot of dressed-up kids, and I had this real slimy Play-Doh to try to deal with and try not to get all over their clothes for a room of two-year-olds. So that was real exciting. But, yeah, they definitely have been a lot of people around me that have led me along and friends that hold me accountable as I walk through life with God.
How were the children handled? Was there an educational program for the children? Were there other activities for the children? Were there youth groups?
Yes, all above. There was children's church during regular church at Southwoods where the kids would go to. So we would attend two services. We would either teach both services, or at a certain age, we would attend one service and then teach one service. But the kids were always invited other kids to their church with them and enjoyed the activities there. They really had a great experience at Southwoods growing up and going through Vacation Bible School there and all the different activities they had for them. And just the everyday Sunday experience was really great for them. Really wasn't until middle school where Southwoods just didn't quite have the background, the people enough to keep that program alive, and especially once in high school. So we moved over to Colonial eventually, and which had a really strong youth program they could be part of. But definitely, you know, there was mission outreach. Both churches would take kids on mission outreach. They wanted to go. Caitlin attended a trip with Colonial to Haiti with her friend Sarah, and some other kids from East went along and did mission service over there. So there's plenty of things that both churches, I feel like, that were really good for kids that they could reach out to. But I did say I think Colonial probably had the stronger high school program, and Southwoods had a really strong youth, you know, fifth grade and below program for the kids. That was real impressive.
If you have children, how did they change your experience? Did your children follow in your path?
The kids followed in our path of attending church and becoming involved in their programs that were there and making friendships there that they've lasted through the years. And they definitely have enjoyed their experiences, I think, with their churches. They used to do overnight lock-ins at Southwoods and bring a whole bunch of friends and watch movies and play games and do all sorts of stuff. So I think it's been a good experience for them over the years, and they have followed along the path. And, you know, college is a tough time to attend a church, and hopefully they can still find ways to attend church, whether at college, at KU.
Was there an educational program for adults apart from regular worship services?
Yeah, Sunday school's kind of gone, and now everybody does life groups. So both churches have life group programs that adults can attend to get extra learning outside of the regular morning worship. I think Southwoods, sometimes they had a class you could go to during one of the services, and Colonial has also done that, so kind of still Sunday school you could attend, but most of them are, it's just gone to life groups. That's what they expect for adult education.
What kind of art forms are present? Please provide visual symbols, music, and rituals. Or describe.
So Southwoods, you know, they did a rock band type of worship service with the praise music. And something cool they did that we really enjoyed for years was dramas. They used to do dramas to really highlight the subject matter of the sermon that day. And those were always kind of fun and really brought out in a funny way the message usually that they were trying to promote that day. And then the symbols really at both churches, I mean, there's maybe a cross in the sanctuary, you know. It's probably not much beyond that, though. They both pretty much just have nice decorations and, you know, a podium. And so, at Colonial, they have a band, too, but it's not quite as rocky as, not as much rock as Southwoods was. It's a little bit more hymn, praise, combination music. And then they both do, you know, collect usually who attended that day, so that's kind of a ritual that usually happened. And they both took tithes each Sunday, could be given. Oh yeah, the communion bread. Southwood's communion bread was like real, those little crackers already done in nice shape, and little grape juice going around. And then Colonial is more just torn bread that they have in a basket already that you dip into a cup at the front of the church. But Colonial only does it once a month. So,
how often did Southwoods do it?
Southwoods does it every week.
What kind of community service activities were undertaken, and which ones were your favorite?
Freedom Fire was probably my favorite community service we did. We'd go down the housing projects on a Friday night and take a meal for probably 30 kids. We'd take gifts for them to hand out to them at the end that we'd raffle off, and they would get, we'd play with the kids when we got there, and then we'd do a message, and then they'd have a meal, and then we'd do a raffle. It's kind of how the night went, and it was always a great experience for the kids and for us to see that. And there was always a community building in the middle of these housing projects that we could have our service at, and we could be outside if it was nice and inside if it wasn't. But that was definitely, I think, for me, one of the coolest things we did. You really got to see people stuck in this welfare cycle, and these kids, they didn't even know how to apply for jobs when they were older, and how Freedom Fire would help them apply for a job and help them go to college if they wanted to go to college, figure out how to do that, because they really had no idea how to do any of that, which was almost blew my mind. The kids had no idea by 16 how to do any of that. And these kids absolutely had no idea how to do that. And most of the kids would try to bring home food for their mom too, after the meal was all given and they ate, you know, they'd go up and get extras because we usually had extra food, and they'd take that home to their mom on a plate. So, you know, it was always kind of broke your heart to see how little they had and how happy they still were. You know, they loved to play just like any other kid. They, you know, liked to try to get the raffle item, you know. It was really, really cool, but it's cool to see, too, how they thought about their moms, too, and wanted to take care of them.
Were there treatment programs for drug or alcohol abuse or physical or mental abuse?
At Southwoods, when we were leaving the church, they were just starting to have more of a mental health type of program, not at the church, but somebody who people could talk to and go to and get help, and they would direct them. So it was a lady who was a nurse and had this background, and so she could help direct them on what to do. But we didn't have an actual program at church where they could get that service. And Colonial, I've never heard anything about it at Colonial, so I don't think they would direct somebody, but I'm pretty sure they have nothing at the church for that.
where there's special interest groups, such as groups for singles or seniors, groups based on common interests, such as hobbies, Bible study groups?
No, there was no special interest groups at Southwoods like that. And at Colonial, there's I don't know if they have any special interest groups either. I don't think so. I think it's all just, if you want to join the certain life group, you can go be part of that. And some of the life groups had more senior people in them, but that'd be about it. But there wasn't a actual senior program at either church. Okay. And the Bible study groups, those would be based really upon day of the week and location. So if they wanted in a Bible study group, they could see what groups were available, where they met, what night they met, what time they met, how long they met, what topic they were going to study. But a lot of the topics were decided within the group by people. So, and once in a while, I always liked it when the church did an all church-led Bible study where you do it separately in your life groups, but everybody would be doing the same study, and that would be like Rick Warren's Purpose Driven Life, and I can't remember. There are multiple ones of those that we did over the years, and there was always a great thing, I thought, for the church to unite the church when we did that. Because the Rick Warren one, even the kids did it. They had their own kids one, too, that the kids participated in each week. So the Bible stays about that's about as close as they get to some of these, the life groups towards, is just by location and week, day of the week.
Did you ever lead a Bible study group, and how did the night look?
Yeah, I led a Bible study group from, probably 1998 or so through 2014 I led a group. And usually we'd meet at my house. We would start with some dessert treat, and the kids would be getting a treat too, and then kids would go down to the basement and play, and they'd have somebody to watch them. And then we would do our group up here for maybe about an hour. And then, and it was time to go home, probably about 8:30. Everybody left. Probably everybody came around 6:30, and everybody would leave about 8:30 to get the kids home to bed. So in our Bible study time was usually made up of an icebreaker question, and then the study, and then prayer time at the end.
What kind of norms and expectations were there for sexual behavior? Were there penalties for violation of those rules?
The church definitely has norms and expectations for sexual behavior. And, if you're married, they expect you not to be committing adultery. If you're single, they don't expect you to be going around sleeping with a bunch of people. And if that was found out to be true, that you were doing that and you were in leadership, you lost your leadership position, but you also had to confess before the leadership body and ask for forgiveness, which I had to sit through one of those before at Southwoods. And so that does happen in the church. And, if a couple has that problem and one of them has been unfaithful, the church is supposed to come forward and try to help and come around them and try to talk to the person who's having an adultery issue and see if they can help them stop doing that and not want to act like that. But it's really up to the own person's heart of what they find they're willing to do, really, to bend their knee to God. And I suppose if the person did not bend the knee to God, then they would probably ask them to leave the church. Now, when we had a homosexual couple start attending Southwoods, they could attend, but they wouldn't be allowed to serve in children's ministry or adult ministry, and they would have had to turn away from that sin to even be placed membership in the church. So most churches won't let homosexual members place membership. They can attend, but they cannot become a member unless they turn away from the sin, because it's such an outward sin. So, they could say that about any sin if they knew about you having some major sin. But the problem is they don't know. The only one they really can tell is homosexuality most of the time. So that one's probably the one that feels it the most.
Did you ever think about leaving? If you actually left, why'd you leave?
Yeah, I left Southwoods and moved over to Colonial Presbyterian in about 2014 and probably left for a lot of reasons. One, I didn't feel like I didn't like how the leadership body was going and how they weren't buying land, or they finally did buy land, but then nothing was being built on it forever. And then also I didn't like how the kids didn't have what they needed there. That wasn't a good situation. So, you know, and I was enjoying I was enjoying Colonial sermons quite a bit. Jim West is a pretty powerful, better really minister speaker than the attending minister at Southwood. So I enjoyed listening to his sermons more, and they were definitely a higher order sermon too. So those things swung me over.
How do you see the future of the group over the long haul? Is the organization growing? Is it modernizing and changing? If it has closed, why did it close?
So, yeah, it's the future of Colonial is definitely strong, and it will make it over a long haul. It has multiple campuses, has a lot of outreach activities, a lot of community involvement. So I think that one's going to keep going strong. And I think they do keep modernizing and changing and trying to meet the needs of the community and meet the needs of the members. And they're building a new youth center for the kids. So their youth program, you know, middle school to high school is strong, keeps it strong, gives them a place to go to be part of. So, and they have done a good job. I think another thing Colonial's done a good job is keeping down their debt situation. And they even sold land to pay off more of the church debt, to pay off the church. So that's been a pretty strong objective of the church over the years with building the new campus here. Quivira is getting themselves whole and not be in debt on that campus. So they've done a good job with that.
What were the best and worst things you remember about your experiences?
Best things. I mean, the best part's been, I guess, watching the kids grow up in the church and watching them, their activities there, and have them enjoy it. And Vacation Bible School, I'd say, is definitely a highlight of that activity, watching them participate in that over the years and really have a great time at it. And then the worst thing I remember, I guess the worst thing would have to be setting through a testimony of one of our leader, our assistant pastor's daughter, confessing her adultery. And that was pretty painful to see and have to witness that. And, you know, her whole family went there, brought shame, you know, on them. And you know, hurt her husband, who was very active in the church and was a great guy too. So it just, that was a pretty dismal point to watch that happen.
What's your favorite Bible verse / story and why? What's it about?
My favorite verse. I'm going to have to, I have some recorded on my phone that I look at. My favorite story, though, I can do that one probably faster and find this verse, but the favorite story would have to be probably David's stories. There's a lot of his that go through the Bible and that are really, really good and stand out. So really, I like his story as far as overall of his life, on how he had such a passionate love for God and was able to express that in words to God through prayers and psalms that he did and singing. So that was, I always thought was really cool, that how he's able to exhibit his love for God really well. And then when he failed and took Bathsheba's and slept with her when she was married to another man, and then had her husband killed and then their baby died, how he was able to ask for forgiveness from God for all his sin that he had done. So I think those are, David's life is a lot of good stories in his life. And then I guess in Philippians is probably one of my favorite, where talks about, you know, pray for everything and cease worrying and pray for everything. That's one of my favorites, because that's something that's really hard to do, that you forget all the time to do in life, is to remember to pray and not worry.
Are mission trips big in your church? Where do they normally go and what do they do?
Yeah, those are big. Southwood's had men's missions to Mexico called Hero Makers. They would go on those and work at orphanages, building things. And then Colonial leads one to Haiti every year. And Guatemala. Oh, yeah, Southwoods does one to Guatemala, to a children's orphanage there where people are dropping off their kids that just really can't take care of them anymore. And then they'll come back and actually get them once. And then, medical missions, too, to Haiti. Southwoods does a medical missions with some doctors. Join a bigger group going there, and nurses. And then Colonial does one to Haiti. And they work in different orphanages helping kids out. And I'm sure there's that's the main one at Southwoods or at Colonial I know of. I don't know of all of theirs probably that they go out and do, but I think they do probably, you know, more local ones in the United States too, with the younger middle school and high school kids go on those too.
Have you ever gone on any mission trips, and do you ever plan to? Why or why not?
I don't mind doing local work, but I'm not too good in third world countries. If there's not a Hyatt or Hilton Hotel Marriott that I can stay at, I probably won't do too well with my allergies and asthma, I feel like, in a rural environment. It's probably not the best for me like that, and I don't like bugs, and so I feel like I'm just not really built for some of these mission trips like that. They're kind of out there like that. If you keep me just more in a local environment, I would be glad to serve all day long. So.
How did you get involved in religion? Was it through your family or friends?
Through my family. My parents brought me up going to church. So when I was baptized in my church growing up, so that's how I know God. Definitely through my parents. Friends, though, you know, have, like Southwoods had led me to that church where some of them were going, some of my sorority sisters, and so we all ended up going there together. That was a nice experience. And my friend Bob definitely would do readings with me during lunch. We would do reading together. So that was always good, too, to learn the word.
How did you find Southwoods, and then how did you later find Colonial?
Southwoods I found through a sorority sister, Terry Thomas, and then Colonial, it was at the end of kind of my neighborhood is where it sets, and I grew up by the original Colonial on 95th and Warnell, so I knew about Colonial, went to some Young Life there growing up, and then we needed a evening service at 6 sometimes because of the kids' sports activities, so they had a Sundays at 6 at Colonial, so we started going to that, and that's how we got acquainted with Colonial and their church, and if we liked it or not was through those Sundays at 6 services where we needed another service time. And that's kind of another thing about churches nowadays. They are very limited on their service times. They don't even do a Wednesday evening service anymore. They don't do a Sunday evening service anymore. There's probably maybe 2 services on Sunday morning. So that's pretty hard for families that have athletes in their family where they play sports, because we get Sunday evening really is one of the best times, I think, that's easiest for families to go worship.
When looking for a church, what are the key things you look for?
When I look for a church, key things, number one is Bible-based. Are they just following the Word of God and they keeping to the truth? And then the second thing I kind of like is full immersion baptism. I think that's a big difference over sprinkling people. It's fully immersing them and baptizing them the way Jesus was. And then after that's probably looking at what are they doing outreach-wise as a church? Do they do a food pantry? Do they try to help the community besides just filling their own pockets with things they want to do at the church? Is there more they're about than just that? And then also I look at communion. Do they take communion? How often do they take communion? I would prefer to have communion every week. It's a great reflection time to thank Jesus for his death on that cross for you and the resurrection. Celebrate it. So those are some of the things I look for. Oh, and then are the people friendly? Are they friendly when you walk through the door? Are they nice? Do they greet you with a smile? Or are they negative and you know, nobody's talked to you the whole time. That's not good at all.
What is your religious group's ideas on what happens after death?
So I'd say they believe that you go to, that you go to, you're present with Jesus right away upon death, if you're going to heaven. If you're not, I'm not sure where what happens if you end up right away, I guess, in hell and darkness, separated fully from God and tormented until you get thrown in the lake of fire eventually at the end when Jesus comes back for the resurrection. Now, I don't know. The only church like I know has kind of different thoughts on that are the Catholic Church. They believe you go to purgatory, so interim place. But most churches, I don't think, believe that.
Does your religious group believe in demons?
Yes, demons are definitely described in the Bible and definitely exist. They all know God, who he is. They all speak his name. They all know all about him. They fear him. They're definitely real. And so when they talk about demons, I definitely know there are demons they talked about in the Bible over and over. Now, aliens are not talked about in the Bible. I'm not sure aliens are true, but I definitely think demons are true. And I definitely believe psychics communicate with the demons to get their knowledge that they get. And that's talked about in the Old Testament. And that's why Paul got thrown in prison one time for casting out a demon out of a girl so she couldn't be a psychic anymore. So definitely described in the Old Testament repeatedly. And the New Testament, really. Jesus knocks a demon out of a guy, casts him out and throws him into pigs, and the pigs go and throw themselves in the water to kill themselves because of the demon.
Does your religious group closely follow the teachings of the Bible?
I believe we do. I think or at least we try to. We try to follow God's word and do what it says to do in the Bible and try to be nice to other people and help them. And so I think we try to as much as possible.
Does your religious group believe that Jesus already resurrected once and is coming a second time?
Yeah, we believe that he was raised after his death in 3 days and he walked the earth for about 40 days and then went back to heaven, and that he will be coming again, this time as a lion, last time as a lamb, but this time as a lion to judge the earth and destroy it, and all those that are believers will be with him forever in heaven after that. So when you die, you go there, but if you're still alive, then everybody will be together in heaven after that with him.
Do you believe that all the believers will be lifted up and everything else will be destroyed?
Yes, I think the rest of the earth will be destroyed and everybody will live in heaven. Or not everyone, only the believers will live in heaven. The others will be cast in the lake of fire to die. Be what happens.
Does your religious group allow just anyone to become leaders in the church? Are there certain requirements? And what's the process you must go through?
Yeah, most churches have requirements that you have to meet. And they usually spell them out to you in a form. And you go through an interview process at my church. And they check, make sure that we can meet certain requirements on the time demands and our spiritual life. Do we exemplify Christ and try to show others, the value of God and your life and show that our relationship with them is valuable? And I think every church I know of, you have to go through your process. And then for elders and deacons, there's a further process, interviews and a children's ministry, you have to do background check to be in there. They have to do a KBI check on you, make sure Kansas Bureau of Investigations finds you or not a pedophile or something. And so they do a thorough check on you.
What about the process?
Does your religious group baptize as babies or adults?
The churches I attend have been baptizing as adults. Some churches like to baptize as babies too and then have them reconfirm when they get older because they're worried if they die before they're baptized, they won't go to heaven. But I don't believe that's what God says about it. Then I don't think he says you're not going to go to heaven. if you weren't baptized yet as a child. But that's why they do it, just because they're worried about them dying before they reach time of being baptized fully into water immersion.
If you've ever have you ever attended any church besides your own that had something that stuck out to you as important that you wish took place at your own church?
Yeah, I attended the cause on the plaza with my daughter, Caitlin, and just to see one of her friends get baptized. And I was really impressed. They baptized probably about almost 50 people that day. And that's probably more than most churches baptize in a year. Most churches probably lucky if they baptize 12 in a year. So that was just really impressive. And I've been back a couple times since then to their church and also had, you know, baptisms that, you know, week before maybe I'd attended and had a lot, you know, I'd baptized another 50 people. I mean, it's just like hard to fathom how they're able to reach out and reach so many people. And, you know, my own church isn't able to reach as many people. And what are they doing, you know, to make that happen? I think it's just being authentic and meeting people where they are, letting them dress casually, real casual, you know, showing music that from their generation instead of from a different generation. So they're reaching that high school 20-year-old group, maybe 30-year-old group, and bringing them in and teaching them how to do more than just sit in church, but to reach out to others and be an example of God to others too.
Does your religious group have any rituals that must be done at weddings?
So I think the exchanging of the vows, the reading of scripture-based vows is one of the things we see. You see changing of the rings. A lot of them do some hymns within the sermon too. I don't know that we have any we have to do besides the vows, and those have to be somewhat Bible-based. And it's done at the church, not, you know, out on the beach, that it's actually done in the church and that it's described as a actual exchange of vows, which is a covenant, though, with God. I think the important part the church points to when they do a sermon is they're pointing towards, or giving a wedding, is they're pointing to the covenant is between you and you two and God. It's not just something you're saying to each other. It's a covenant with God. And if you break your vows, that's a breaking of a covenant with God that you made. So he's at the center of your life together. This is the most important thing.
What religious holidays does your religious group partake in?
They partake in Easter, so the resurrection, death and resurrection of Christ. They participate in Christmas, the birth of Christ being celebrated. They celebrate Lent, which is leading up to Jesus' death. So sacrificing, you know, things, something you like for 40 days before. And then they celebrate Ash Wednesday. They celebrate Good Friday. They celebrate Palm Sunday. They celebrate Advent leading up to the birth of Christ. I guess that's all the ones I think of religious based that they celebrate.
Why do you personally choose to follow Christ?
Through my upbringing, I got to be exposed to who Jesus was and that he lived. And when you look at the Case for Christ book that was written, I think that's a great explanation of all the history that has gone into actual Jesus' life. You can follow it through. You can follow the things in the Bible. They're historical based. They're provable that they happened. So I think the case to believe is really strong there. The case, and then the way the man was made in the Bible, it makes sense, you know, to think that something came out of nothing doesn't make any sense. That doesn't happen here ever in the world. That's not logical. I'm an engineer. It's not logical at all. But then, you know, as you develop your relationship with Christ, you realize that there is no happiness apart from him, that you only find happiness when you're with him in a relationship and obeying the rules. So it's kind of like driving down the highway and you stay in your lane, you feel safe and happy. You get out of your lane, cross over, possibly hit another car, their life's messed up. So that's the way God tries to give us boundaries to try to keep us safe and help us to have a happy life. And I think that's what we're all searching for, is peace and happiness. And Jesus provides those for us through his word and study and being in a relationship with him.